from the producers of all the great James Bond films, from Dr. No to For Your Eyes Only. And now, Roger Moore is Ian Fleming's James Bond 007 in Octopussy.
I'm Octopussy. Let me tease you with a peek at the next and most fabulous Bond of all.
This is Bond at its best. A spiral of spectacle and thrills. Octopussy tops them all. Roger Moore in his newest James Bond adventure, filling the screen with excitement.
Fill her up, please.
I need refilling.
What I do for England.
Hello and welcome to the Film and Water Podcast, proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, Rob Kelly. It's been a little while since we did an episode of Film and Water, but we're back for another audio commentary, this time for Octopussy, the 1983 James Bond adventure. And joining me is my pal, Chris Lewis. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Rob. Happy to be money penny to your M.
Oh, I'm not even James Bond. I have to be M.
What You're the boss. Hell? You're the boss.
Well, all right. That's fair. All right. I retract my offense with that. So, okay. Well, of course, everybody said, you know how the audio commentaries work. Chris and I are going to count down and then we will start the movie. So if you want to listen to us as the movie rolls on, we'll give you a brief moment to get caught up. Otherwise, I think you will be able to enjoy this commentary even if I'm not watching the movie along with us. So Chris, if you're ready, I'll count down and we will get rolling.
Okay, go for it.
All right. So, we're going to start the movie in 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. All right, here we go. We have our MGM logo. Now, before...
You should have counted down 005, yeah, 004.
I know, I know. Yeah. this is the 40th anniversary of Octopussy. That's why we're doing this partly, is it's this movie came out in June of 1983. It came out in... on June 10th, I believe. Yeah, in America, June 10th. I believe you guys got it a little bit early over in England. But it's the 40th anniversary. Now, did you see... Let's talk about your history. What's your history with James Bond? Are you a big fan of the Bond film? Do you see them all in the theater? What's your 007?
Fairly big. I mean, actually, I am... so I would have been 12, 13 when this came out, which is, I think, is a good time. Actually, to be watching James Bond. But I was really into the books. I actually read most of the books, and James Bond novels were fairly easy to get hold of, either in the library or in the charity shops, the thrift shops. And so I read an awful lot of Ian Fleming. At one point, I think I had all the, secondhand books, all of them. I mean, it would have been the films that inspired that. I'm pretty sure I would have seen this in the theater at the time. And then my other half is a real James Bond fan. So we've got them all on DVD somewhere. We tend to sort of, they're a fairly easy watch on a Sunday evening when you just go, I can't be doing with anything that needs attention. You know, I'm too tired to watch anything that needs actual concentration on the TV. And you'll stick a Bond film on and they're just really, it's like putting on an old pair of slippers, isn't it? You
know, it really is. Yeah. It really is. Yeah. So, I grew up I saw this in the theater. My first memory of seeing a James Bond movie in the theater was unfortunately Moonraker, which is not really one of the better ones.
Okay.
But I was 8. There's a chance my dad took me and my sister to see The Spy Who Loved Me, but I don't have any memory of that. But I know I saw Moonraker, and then after that, I have seen every James Bond movie in the theater, every single one since then. The highs and lows. Look, Roger Moore. is my James Bond. He was the guy in the role when I discovered the franchise. And so to me, he's my favorite. I know people tend to, I think they look at it, whatever Bond, obviously Sean Connery is the guy that set the template, but yeah. I love Roger Moore in this role. I just find him just effortlessly charming, even if we will admit by this point, he's getting a little long in the tooth for these adventures.
Yeah.
I have to say.
And they're a little campy at this stage, aren't they? I mean,
they are,
you know, I mean, I still think Live and Let Die is my favorite Roger Moore Bond film, just because, you know, he's got a little bit more edge there, and it's, yeah, they're slightly winky to the audience, aren't they, in this one and later ones. But, you know, it's all part of the charm, isn't it? There was always a little bit of sort of wry humor to even in Connery's day, so yeah, it's great.
Yeah, well, they said we've got this opening here. We're set on this military base. By the way, we blew by this when we were talking. There's this little bit where this military commander walks up to this fence and he kind of pushes a guy out of the way, right? We see that he kind of like shoves a guy out of the way, which is code for what a dick, you know?
Yeah.
And of course, not too long later, we would have a president that would be that much of a goon. So joke's on us. But
yeah. Now, but I think we're supposed to be in Cuba here, aren't we? In the,
I guess so,
we're never actually said on screen, but we've had somebody who looks remarkably like Fidel Castro.
Like Fidel Castro, who is, right,
who
exactly
is looking right down the low cut top of the Bond.
I love Bond, right?
Yeah.
I love that. This is a great bit. Pull the chutes, and then they get the two guys go fly. That's a great. You know, that's a great bit. That's a great, yeah. That's non-violent. Like, he doesn't have to kill them or anything like that, but they're just, I like this guy.
We have the really odd thing of an airbase right next to a polo ground. I don't know if that's a thing. But, and I know they're supposed to be airmen, but why do they have parachutes on in the back of a Jeep?
Yeah. You know? Put them on later, guys.
That was non-essential kit for them at that stage. But never mind. It's and like you say, it's a really good way of just making them, they just drift off, don't they? Nothing violent happens. They just disappear.
Out of frame. That's it. They're gone. And you know what? One of the you know, recurring motifs across all these James Bond movies is that every bad guy can be distracted by a hot girl.
Yeah.
There are no gay men in the James Bond universe where this doesn't work. You know, it's every guy is like, oh, I love this, the fake horse's ass. There.
Do you think they went to Q and went, could you just knock us up a fake horse's bum, please?
Like, what is the budget at MI6, guys?
Can you imagine that phone call? You know, there's a couple of other really dubious gadgets later on. You're just going to go, are you serious? Is that? Come on. I can do all kinds of incredible things. You want a fake horse's ass? Okay, fine.
And it's going to be on hinge that has to rotate into the sky. Yeah. Like, we're never going to need it again after this, but we're going to need it for this one. But yeah, I said, I love James Bond. I mean, I straight up admit that for anyone who didn't grow up on these movies, I think that their charms are a little elusive. My wife did not grow up with these, and, you know, she kind of looks at them as like, oh, they're kind of cheesy, and they're certainly sexist, and they're, you know, racist at some point. Yeah. I mean, not racist, but at the very least, racially insensitive. And I can't argue any of that. They are, but I grew up on them, and I love them. And like you just said, it's when you want to just put a movie on that you will enjoy, features some good gags, some great spectacle, some fun action scenes. You can't beat the James Bond series.
No.
You know,
these films are untouched by the hand of political correctness, aren't they?
Yeah.
There's nothing woke in the next 2 hours, folks. If you know, if that's going to upset you, dip out now. But yeah, no, there's some great stuff. I mean, we're watching at the moment this fantastic.
Oh, this is an amazing stunt. The plane flies through the hang. Look at this.
Yeah. And this was a kit built plane where the wings genuinely do fold.
That's look at that. Wow. Yeah.
Now he does this victory roll. Now look at the fuel gauge. This is why I'm dubious that it's in actual Cuba, because he's running on fumes in this little plane. And I know Cuba and Florida are close, but I don't know that you can get 90 miles on how little fuel he's got. So I don't know if this gas station is in Florida or in Cuba, but hey, there we go.
I didn't even think about it, that it might not be in Cuba, that he might be flying all the way to America. That's right. I didn't think about
Well, he
that.
Says, doesn't he, to the lovely lady, whose name I don't think we find out.
No, we never hear her name. She's,
you know,
the
I'll see you in Miami.
Agent.
So I'm
That's right. He does say that.
Heading,
yep.
I assume he's heading
to Florida.
There we
go. The wings come up. There we go. And that, gas stations are always run by guys that look like prospectors in these movies. They always look at, here we go. Now here's our
the big old hat.
here's our title sequence here. These are always fun. You know, they got a little more saucy as they went on. I mean, now we straight up have naked women in these things.
There is a lot of flesh on show in this title sequence. There's also a lot of lasers. There was a period in the sort of early 80s where they used a lot of lasers for their effects. So lasers have nothing to do with this film. You could have gone for Indian themed or circus themed, mm-hmm. but no, it's naked ladies, roller dancers for some reason, and lasers, which I think puts it very firmly early 80s, doesn't it?
Yeah. I love the opening lines to the song, which is "All I wanted was a distraction for an hour or two," which that sounds like that's lampshading this. That's that's the James Bond appeal that we just talked about. Yeah. I mean, it's like, boom, there it is. Yeah. I just want to be entertained for a couple of hours and have fun. And that's what these are. Now, this song is by Rita Coolidge. She sings it. Rita, it's all time high. It's catchy. I don't think it's one of the all timers. I think it's a little too, adult contemporary, you know, AM kind of sound, considering when you talk about Live and Let Die, you got Paul McCartney and stuff like that. And, I will say my favorite James Bond movie of all time is For Your Eyes Only, the film just preceding this. And there's something so funny about the Bond series where they will get crazier and crazier and crazier. And then they'll do one where they scale it back. And then they get crazier and crazier again. Like they keep reverting to the mean. And that's what Fear Eyes Only was intended as after the excesses of Moonraker. I mean, he goes in outer space for Pete's sakes. And
totally believable.
Yeah. Fear Eyes Only is much more grounded. It's much more a spy adventure. And then now we're one film after that. And now we're already kind of getting goofier again. So the series just does that. They just can't help themselves. And I felt like they did that with the Daniel Craig movies. Is that now those movies?
Yeah.
I love Daniel Craig as James Bond. I think he was a terrific James Bond, but I think that they got more and more kind of up their own bums a little bit as they went on. They got more and more serious to where I think they kind of stopped being fun. And I think that loses some of the appeal. So I'm really curious as to what they're going to do, you know, what the next take is going to be the next one. Is it going to be lighter? It really can't be any darker. So it'll be kind of interesting if they go a little sillier for the next iteration of this character.
If you want a recommendation for a different version of that theme tune, David Arnold did a great remix album in the early 2000s, and Pulp, Jarvis Cocker, did a version of that song, which is much more stripped down and really cool. Yeah. You can get it on Spotify and that sort of stuff.
Wow.
So yeah, if you're interested, go and have a little listen, because it's he does it in a very different, very Jarvis kind of way.
Now this is directed by John Glenn, who was an editor on the James Bond movies, and then he got his first chance to direct with For Your Eyes Only, which I thought hit the ground running, and then he would handle the series all the way through License to Kill.
Okay.
He's still around. He's still alive as far as I know, and he's presumably retired. But you know, he was the you know, he held the tiller for the 80s of James, the entirety of the 80s, actually, from 81 to 89. So he was their guy. And this opening sequence with their chasing the clown, who we'll find out is Agent 009. This is a banger sequence. I think this is terrifically paced.
You mentioned Moonraker. It's a little bit like where the woman in the fluty dress is running through the woods, where she gets chased by the Doberman, isn't she? There's that kind of same sort of feeling of, you know, genuine peril here. You know, I love that they do these big kicks with their massive great clown shoes on as well. Terrific.
It's so, you know, you would think it's so kind of silly to have a guy in this clown suit, but it really, I mean, it said it's paced well. It doesn't have. There's no laughs in it. You know, we don't know that this guy is an agent. We just know it's going down there. We see that. Okay. There's these two are twins. There we go. Yeah. Kicks him with the clown shoes. Pretty good. Pretty good. And then he's going to get the knife in the, he's going to get a knife in the back in a second. But yeah, this is a really, I understand the James Bond movies have to open with James Bond, but I wouldn't have minded if they had opened the movie with this. I think this really, ooh, right, well, he almost get that. Well lit. I love the lighting of it. Like he looks, he's about to get it there right in the, right in the back. And then he falls into the water and just gets carried off.
He's tough, isn't he? He gets a knife in the back. He falls in the weir and he still manages to climb out of the river and crawl to the embassy. I mean, they make 009s tough in this film.
By the way, 009 is played by an actor named Andy Bradford, who had quite a number of really significant credits. He was in Sid and Nancy. He's in Krull, a personal favorite of mine. And he's in Never Say Never Again, the Sean Connery movie, which also premiered this year, making it the only time you've ever had two James Bond movies in a single calendar year. That's not an official movie, according to the Eon universe, but nevertheless, he had two James Bond movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is great. I love it. Like the seer in the mirror, great smashes opening. Through the glass.
And that Fabergé egg prop is just beautiful. I don't know who made that, but it's gorgeous.
Yeah, it's great. I love the balloon just kind of dangling. It's terrific. It's terrific. So Roger Moore we're going to be introduced. Of course, we just saw him, but when he's going to be introduced sort of formally here. I got to stop. This whole sequence is so mean to Miss Moneypenny. This is so mean-spirited.
Really snippy towards one another, aren't they?
James Bond is like, he's the young hot one now.
Yeah, I think he's got a small bone, if you know what I mean, you know?
So mean to Lois Maxwell. I'm sorry.
They usually have a bit of a flirty kind of relationship, but this feels a little bit more edgy. You know, she's obviously not happy with him in this, and she's making that note.
He gives her all the, I love that she gets one rose. And or those aren't roses, whatever those are, and
carnations.
And then this the young girl gets all the all right, Grandpa. And what
we
are you
should
doing?
Call HR because this is
there's no HR in MI6. Clearly, they do not spend any money on that. And now we have a new M here. Because our previous actor had passed away just before the starting of For Your Eyes Only, so he doesn't even appear in the film. So now we've got.
Gotcha. And nice to see MI6 as an art expert.
Yeah. Guys, really.
Because
the Queen's coach, right? Because that's supposed to be the Queen's royal coach. But anyway, so Roger Moore, he had signed a 3-picture contract with Ian, and that contract obviously had been fulfilled as of The Spy Who Loved Me. And he was then doing the movies one at a time. One. He was not contracted, and he didn't want to do it anymore. He wanted to pack it in after this, after For Your Eyes Only. But then, and they apparently, the Eon producers, looked around and started talking to other actors. They went to Timothy Dalton, as they always seem to be doing, never quite hiring him. And then some other actors. And they even talked to American actor James Brolin, which James Bond's got to be British. I'm sorry, you can't have an American playing James Bond.
He looked good at that time.
He looks terrific.
I don't think it would have worked.
I can't take James Brolin seriously after his spy turn in Pee Wee's Big Adventure. I just can't. but then they got the news that Sean Connery was coming back as James Bond as kind of an FU to the Eon producers, and they were so worried that trying to bring in a new James Bond against Sean Connery was asking for trouble. So they basically begged Moore to stay on. By the way, The Property of a Lady here, as we're going to see, that is a title of a Ian Fleming short story, James Bond short story. But anyway, they begged Moore to do it. I'm sure they backloaded a truck of, a whole truck full of money to him. And so here we go. And then, of course, he does one more movie.
And a nice trip to India.
Yeah. There you go. I love this. You would have to, I was about to say that these are incredibly cartoony Russians, right? Incredibly, but
can we just,
they are not any cartoonier than the guys you see.
Stephen Berkoff here.
Stephen Berkoff. Oh, he's great. He's fantastic.
He's just dangerously mad in this. I have a theory about this film, which there are just too many bad guys. I want it all to be Stephen Burkoff all the time. He reminds me of Frank Gorshin as the Riddler.
He looks so a little like Frank Gorshin. He does.
He does. And he's just that sort of suddenly changing pitch and volume in his speech with for no good reason and no warning. And he's brilliant. I think he's terrific in this. He's just absolutely crazy. And he makes General Gogol look a little sort of cuddly and sort of warm and teddy bearish as communist generals go. And Stephen Burkoff is just nuts in this film, and I love it. He's great.
Yeah, he was in the other movie most people remember him from. He's the bad guy in Beverly Hills Cop. He's the guy that was constantly sort of outfoxing Axel Foley and something. He's also in A Clockwork Orange. He's in that movie as well. But he's got a wonderfully menacing kind of look to him, but like I said, I when I was watching this,
it would be remiss of me, Rob, to not to point out that he has been in Doctor Who.
Of course. Please, is he British? Is he a British actor?
Yeah.
Okay, he's British. So of course, he's a British actor. He's been in Doctor Who. Of course, he has.
Everybody's been in Doctor Who.
Yeah. But anyway, I was just saying that, like, you know, these guys are. You could argue, boy, these are pretty cartoonish Russians. But if you ever watch any Russian television that are the pro-Putin guys during this whole conflict with the Ukraine, they're just as cartoony. So this really isn't any less cartoony than what we see in real life. The West is decadent and divided. I love that kind of like birthmark he has in the center of his head. There's something about it. It's like a third eye kind of focus right on him. I love this room too. Like I love the portrait of Lenin on the wall. That's
this sort of grand marble hall with sort of massive great
thirst for conquest
and stuff. And I think this actor is the who's meant to be like the president was meant to be like Brezhnev, wasn't
he? He looks a little like Brezhnev. The big bushy eyebrows. Brezhnev had those big thick eyebrows. And I think wasn't Brezhnev premier at this point? In Russia, but yeah, I would agree that one of the downsides to this movie, it is a little convoluted. There's just a little too many. You've got, you're going to have General Orlov, and then we're going to have Octopussy, who's kind of a Catwoman-esque figure, and that she's sort of a good, sort of a bad. But then you've got another guy on top of that, and then you've got his henchmen. So yeah, this is. Yeah. There's a lot going on in the screenplay.
There's one bit, I was taking notes, and I was one bit and then going, wait, who's double-crossing who again? It's just like, what does she think, and what are they doing, and what is he telling her? And yeah, it ties itself up in knots. Fortunately, it's a Bond film, and you don't have to engage brain. But when you do have to watch it for a podcast and go, what's going on here? It doesn't quite hang together.
Yeah.
But it's fine. We're here for the spectacle, and we move along swiftly. And it's great to see the Kremlin has its own version of MI6's art expert. They've got their own art expert.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, this reminds me of the final shot of Raiders of the Lost Ark with just all the stuff.
Except
this stuff's not in boxes. It's just out loose.
Lying around.
It's still just lying around. Stuff's going to get dusty, guys. But anyway, the screenplay to this movie was written by the standard James Bond writers, plus a guy named George MacDonald Fraser, who was a novelist and a screenwriter, and he wrote The Three Musketeers for the Saul Kinds, and he also wrote Red Sonja, but maybe, let's not get into that necessarily. But one of the reasons I read that this movie is set in India is because he had done a bunch of research on India for a novel he was writing, and he just wanted to use the research that he had done. I think, wow, that's kind of like...
Fair enough.
Can we set out, I did all this... I went to the library a lot. Can we just use it? Okay. All right, that's fine. Right, the property of a lady. There we go. How famous is James Bond, right, in the universe? Is he, he's a secret agent, but good Lord, he's been to the moon, and he's he's parachuted off of, I would think he doesn't need to be here for this. He's kind of famous. I would think it would be distracting. Or we'd say, geez, MI6 is involved in this because their top secret agent is sitting here.
The key word being secret.
Secret.
Secret agent. Secret. I think that's the thing, isn't it? Genuine spies, you wouldn't look twice at. So here's this incredibly suave, incredibly erudite, incredibly well-dressed guy who women cannot help themselves but throw themselves at him. he's got to look a lot more mundane.
Yeah.
And yes, there is no reason to go to this auction, and he clearly upsets the art expert quite a lot during this.
That guy looks like an art expert too. He looks like a guy that would live in the world of Christie's Auction House and Sotheby's and things like that. Yeah. He just has that kind of Pumphrey monocled look. Yeah. But here's another one of our villains, which is Louis Jourdan as Kamal. Considering the legendary career that Louis Jourdan had, he worked with Hitchcock and Max Ophuls, and I mean, just had this amazing, amazing career. I feel a little bad that my go-to credit for him is Swamp Thing. I can't help it. I saw that movie in the theater, and I love that movie, and he's arcane in that. So here he is, you know. But
I was going to suggest he'd be a great one for Fade Out, Rob.
Yeah. Oh, I got.
He's got such a really amazing back catalog.
I have to look up what his final film is. Oh boy, I hope it's
is it called The Last Comet or The Lost Comet or something?
Oh, I have no idea. Okay,
I'm gonna look it up now. You keep talking. I'll look.
Yeah, he looks. Louis Jourdan always looks like he's a little bored in these movies. I think he probably was. You know, he just like, here's at the auction, £500,000. I thought, oh, okay.
All these meaningful looks across the road, and you know, everybody's glaring at one another this whole time.
Bond's finally like, no, we're not doing it. Okay. I'm surprised that, I mean, I know it's going to hinge, you know, the plot's going to hinge on that in a second, but I really am shocked that, like, for something that's worth £500,000, they let you touch it. You know, when they bring it out with the little red velvet pillow, that they let you actually touch it with your hand.
Can I just take a little look and hide it behind my catalog? And here's the new one. Yeah, I don't think that's how auctions work.
Probably not. Can I touch the Picasso before I buy it? No, you can't do that. Just buy it. What are you talking about? You
cannot do that. Buy it, don't buy it. You can touch it when you give me £500,000 for it. Touch it all you want, man. Do what you want.
Yeah, that's fine. But... Now,
go ahead.
Oh, no, I was saying Bond was in front of a newsstand there, and I was craning my neck as much as I can to see if there was any comic books on display, but I couldn't catch it, couldn't spy anything.
Oh,
I always look for that. Here's the original.
The guy that's driving the black cab in that scene is the guy that played Boba Fett.
Really? Jeremy Brett?
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. There's another Star Wars connection in this film. Well, I mean, there's a bunch. Obviously, they were shot in Pinewood and stuff like that. But there's another actor who we will get to much later in the film who has a connection to Star Wars as well, which I was discovered. So we'll get to that again. It's near the end of the film when he shows up. But I mean, of course, there has to be these movies are in production around the same time as the Star Wars movies, and they're shot. A lot of them were shot in England. So, I mean, you're going to use a lot of the same people.
They were on the same. They were Pinewood, I think.
Shot in Pinewood. Stage, yeah. Soundstage? Yeah. Yeah. The Superman movies are the same way. You know, like a lot of the same actors are in Superman and James Bond because it's using all the same people, using the same crew. So here we go. Now we're going to our far off location is India. I have to, you know, I mean, again, I've been keeping up with the Bond movies, but I'm guessing it's harder and harder to come up with a setting that is sufficiently, you know, unfamiliar to people in this world of where we can see videos from any part of the world. The world just seems like a smaller place, you know. But when I was 12 and watching this movie, I knew nothing about India, you know. I had no idea. So this might have been my first introduction to it, as culturally insensitive as it might be, you know. But
yeah, we should warn. There's a lot of cultural stereotypes about to come up, but
yeah.
There's a lot of snakes and cobras being put around here, aren't there? I think they must be real because they look too good to be kind of puppets.
I love here that he's playing the James Bond theme.
Yeah,
to the cobra. That's a fun little gag. Bond even is going to comment on it in a second. He gives him some money. Charming tune. There you go. Now this actor here
the sign, the cool sign, isn't it? They'll play this tune for you.
That's fun. I didn't even think about that. That's a great in-universe way of explaining it. That's terrific. But this actor here is Vijay Armitage. I hope I said that correctly. Now, he was not an actor. He was a tennis player who somehow worked his way into movies, and there will be a gag later on with a tennis racket.
Yeah.
As kind of calling out to that. But if you look at him and you think he looks familiar, that's probably because he is in Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home. He is the captain who is issuing the report about the probe having gotten rid of all the ship's power. And he says, our engineers are working on a makeshift solar sail, which if successful, oh, wow. Okay. That's him. That's the same guy. That's him right here. Wow. So, yeah.
I did not know that he's done it. He got well into that, didn't he, then?
Yeah. He was not an actor. I don't know. I think he somehow, Cubby Broccoli saw him or something and just tapped him to put in the movie. And he's got a fairly large part for a non-actor. He's pretty significant.
He's got a very significant part and meets a sticky end, spoiler alert.
He does. Yes, he does. Ooh, oh, well, yeah. Anybody around Bond always, you know. Play with your asp. There you go. On cut to a girl's butt. There we go.
Smash cut to lady's bottom.
I love the woman walking in around the pool with her high heels, as most women do, of course. When you're around the pool, you're walking in your... There we go. I love this hotel, the open air, like the this looks... Oh, the girl's looking at him. Yeah. Oh, yeah. All the girls always have to give Bond the eye.
Basically anything I can do for you, sir. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. I don't know what kind of hotels MI6 pays for, but boy.
It's a good gig. It's a good, anything at all? Maybe later. She kind of, she's probably half his age.
They all are at this point.
Yeah. I think it says something about how, despite, you know, they had gone through the Connery years, how little the Broccolis had really considered the life, how long this franchise could go, because that when they signed, Roger Moore was older than Sean Connery. So they hired Roger Moore to take over the part, and he was already older than Connery was, which of course nowadays they would never do. They realize, well, no, we got to get 5-6 movies out of this guy. We got to hire like a 30-year-old and that way. But, and that's why Roger Moore at this point is, again, I don't mean to harp on it, but he is getting a little old for this, to where all the women are like, oh, okay. And you're like, you know, I mean, he still looks great.
He had a track record, didn't he? Whereas, I mean, Sean Connery was completely new actor, pretty much, wasn't he? Roger Moore had been the Saint on the Saint, so he already had that suave spy kind of, you know, kind of thing down. So then he was a known quantity, I guess.
Yeah. He was in a movie, I think it's between Fear Eyes Only or Octopussy, or maybe just before Fear Eyes Only, where he played, it's called, when it was released in America, it was called Folks, F-F-O-L-K-E-S, and it's a spy thriller, not a spy, but like an action adventure thriller, and Anthony Perkins is the villain. I believe it was retitled North Sea Hijack, and it's one of these odd little movies that I just remember so distinctly. And that's, I mean, I love Roger Moore because he's James Bond. He's my James Bond, but he was in other movies and I just loved him. He played in North Sea Hijack. He's this kind of grizzled, old ex-agent who they call back into one last job kind of thing. And he's really utterly charming. And I just look at him. I just love him. You know, I just find him just so like, oh, he's got that humor. He has a humor to him that I feel like Connery didn't. For Connery, there was a meanness to his James Bond, and I prefer Moore's just lighter touch. Yeah, this guy's cheating at backgammon here.
It's interesting. Yeah. And Bond clocks it, doesn't he, with the dice? And But I think that's the thing, isn't it? You get different. You've got to strike that balance between, you know, this guy has to be a killer. You know, he has to be able to dispatch people, and you have to believe that he's a threat. But at the same time, there is this lightness, this wry humor, the slightly sarcastic humor sometimes, isn't there? And Roger Moore just takes it a little bit more campy. Mm-hmm. But that's okay. You know, it's just a different interpretation, and it's all good. It's all great. And I think Daniel Craig brought it back much more into a hard man kind of territory, and then nudged the humor in more and more as the films went on.
In Fear Eyes Only, in that scene where there's the guy in the car and it's teetering on the edge, And Bond is standing there, and Bond kicks the car off the cliff on purpose. Apparently, yeah. Moore didn't want to do it. He thought that was too hard edged, and they talked him into it. And it's, but that's, okay. That's where Roger Moore's, yeah. his inherent personality was. You know, he was like, oh, I just did yeah. not really that level here. I love that he's carrying around this $500,000 egg in his pocket. Yeah. Like your nice cell phone. Yeah. You know, oh, I got my Fabergé egg here. Hey, Mr. Bond.
Yeah.
To be a good secret agent, you have to know the rules of every high class table game that exists. Yeah. You have to know. I don't know how to play this game. Do you know how to play this? I don't.
I have played it a couple of times, but that's about it. It's quite complicated, I think. backgammon. We have a set which has been played a couple of times, but yeah, it's and never for money.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Mostly going, what do I do now?
Yeah, I wouldn't know.
I move this one here? It's a bit like a sort of chasing the counters around the board, I seem to remember. But
okay. Yeah. No. I'd be out of my element here. Oh, spin, Mr. Bond.
That is a great threat, isn't it? Yeah.
I intend to. Come on. Yeah. He's just so like I love this guy defies the laws of physics by crushing dice with his palm. Is he Superman?
he's Superman turning coal into diamonds, isn't Woo! He?
That is a strong grip that he can smash yeah. dice with and just his palm.
He's got the most evil hard stare in film, hasn't he? He's just, oh, wow. Okay.
Oh, it bumps into that guy. Yes, and he put he's got the egg there.
I love how casually they treat this immensely priceless Fabergé egg through the whole film. They toss it around in their hands. They slip it into a pocket.
It's not in a box or anything or a bag.
The most valuable thing you will ever touch in your whole life.
I don't carry around comic books without bags on them. Like this guy, these guys are carrying a half a million dollar
just Fabergé in case you get egg. Fingerprints on it. Yeah.
Yeah. We're on these little. We're going to hit into our big action set piece in a second.
Type things, yeah. And look at this guy's gun. It is a blunderbuss. It's like a portable cannon.
I love the way that they're going to kind of jerry rig the footage a little bit to make these things look like they're going way faster than I think things can go. Look at the thing. He's going to wheelie in. Look at that. I don't think these things can go this fast. These are essentially golf carts. Look at that. It looks like you're going 50. Yeah, that is a big gun. Down steps.
I don't think this is a bad chase scene, actually.
Do you know? Yeah, no. Yeah, it's fun.
It's quite well shot, and it feels quite, and there's a lot of people milling around, so there's quite a lot of danger around just from pedestrians.
Oh, there's Vijay hitting guys with his tennis racket. There you go.
And they do the crowd looking back and forth like a kind of tennis gag. Yeah.
Yep.
And this guy's blade thing is really nasty looking.
Yeah.
Into what appears to be the heart, but actually, fortunately, it's a big old wad of money. Oh, dear.
Oh, there we go. Thank God for hard cut. I love it. We're going to land right in the guys. And the guy, I love the double take. That guy really went for it.
Yeah.
Game set and match. They are really in case you didn't know, he's a tennis player.
Leaning hard into the tennis puns, aren't they? Yeah.
Really got some air with that. They have the camel looking.
And it's great, the colours and just that you really get I've never been to India, but you really get a feel for the sort of atmosphere and the whole culture. Even though there's quite a lot of there's a bit of a fight scene coming up, which is a bit you've got to have elephants blocking the road because it's India, stuff like that, cattle wandering free, all that kind of stuff.
This does have a little bit of a Raiders feeling to it, which of course had come out 2 years earlier, and it just has that end of Indy with the box, the baskets and this is great. Here, this is this guy with this knife. This is a great. now we are gonna trip hammer through every Indian cliche. We got the hot coals.
The guy
laying on the bed of nails.
Here we go. Yeah.
He's got the holes in his back. Oh, and then, oh, right on the bed of nails. Ouch. Get off my bed. Ba-dum-bum-bum. There we go. The flame. Yeah. This is great. I love he throws him. He's going to throw it to this guy, and he catches it and then punches out. That's a great gag. Sword swallower. Pulls it out of the guy. Look at that thing. Yeah.
Isn't that a nod to the Indiana Jones where he does all his fancy sword play and Indy just shoots him?
Set all those guys on fire. It's hard to know. I mean, I'm sure they were prepping this in 81, 82.
Yeah.
Hard to know how much Raiders, but you have to think there was some level of, like, they saw this, they saw that movie and went, okay, we gotta up the game a little bit here. Cause Spielberg is, which of course, you know, the reason they even did Indy is because Spielberg wanted to direct an Indiana Jones movie and they didn't want to let him. So he went off and did his own
Bond
thing.
He wanted to do a Bond, did he?
Yeah. Yeah. He wanted to direct.
Okay. Yes. All right. Okay.
Yeah. And George Lucas, they were commiserating one day and Lucas said, I have something better than James Bond.
Okay.
So there you go. If they had just let him direct one of the Bond movies, there might be no Indiana Jones.
Moonraker like might have been a whole lot better.
There you go. There. I love that. Now, the advertising comes back to the second sheet comes down.
A nod to Green Hornet. I seem to think that Green Hornet's car came out between an advert.
Oh, really? Oh, I don't remember.
Okay. People,
that's a Green I like
Hornet
that gag.
Fans can comment.
I love that thing. The bird cage. You rotate it and it opens the door. I love all. Yeah. I'm a sucker for
and it's a little bit
secret
get smart
passages.
As well,
yeah, very yes.
Are, yeah, yeah, yes. Yeah. Oh, here we go. More Indian stereotypes. Here we go.
Yeah, this is, we are drowning in this. They are with the rope. Yeah, who, I guess Margaret Thatcher signed off on these budgets. You know, she was, it's all good. Whatever we got to spend. It's all right. A lot of the stuff that Q comes up with will only work in the most specific circumstances. Imaginable. The person has to be standing in the exact spot that they need them to be. Yes. You know.
See if you can spot where they're building the horse's backside.
Yeah. Here we got this door with the nails on it. That's gonna here. Creak. And this. Oh yeah. It's only gonna work.
What if it's the milkman? What if it's the postman coming?
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Oh, well, you can't make an omelet, and all that.
Inappropriate workplace sexual harassment. This is clever, where they put the microphone in the egg. I think this must be early Bluetooth because he's got a little earpiece, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
So I think this must be Bluetooth 10 years ahead of its time.
There you go. And nitric and we've got acid in the pen. It dissolves all metals. There we go.
Now, was it Skyfall where we meet the new Q and he says, he gives him a gun and a radio. And he goes, it's a bit mean. And he goes, what were you expecting? An exploding pen. And I just wonder if that's a shout back to this acid spitting pen here. Oh, yeah. And a digital watch. And digital watches with the height of technology and sophistication.
I'm going to guess that Seiko had some money in this movie by the fact that we see their logo many times in this.
I mean, these days it's Omega, isn't it? Omega pay big bucks for their product placement.
Yeah.
And here's a small, little, discreet little spy camera here.
Yeah. Gonna aim it at this girl when she's happy
about
it. Oh,
goodness me. Call HR again.
Yeah, oh, Lord.
It's just an HR nightmare.
Come on. I mean, it's stuff like this that when my wife rolls her eyes, like, I can't blame her. I
just
really can't.
Stick the Benny Hill yakety sax over the top of it and be done with it, you know?
Benny Hill would have been great in one of these movies, just as like a, you know, a side comic character for two scenes.
Yeah. Well, the Italian Joe, you ever seen the Michael Caine Italian Joe?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
He's great comic relief in that, Benny Hill, yeah.
I forgot about the zooming in on the boobs thing. That is like, oh, come on. Come on. Yeah, James, you're like 55. Like, what are you doing? Yeah. Come on.
Stop in this stuff, yeah.
Yeah, oh my. So now we've seen this woman earlier in the film, but this is the actress is Christina Weyborn. She's really quite beautiful. She's like Kamal Khan's kind of henchwoman. She had just a couple of credits before this and then not a whole lot after. I don't know why she didn't have like a more of a career. She was in Victory at Entebbe, and then she played Greta Garbo in a movie called The Silent Lovers. And okay. I like her here. I think she's terrific.
Great. She's really classy. I mean, she's obviously on the side of Khan, so she's a bit of a baddie, but no, she's great in this. I think she's terrific.
Yeah. She plays Magda.
She was Swedish, wasn't she? Swedish, and so was
Maud Adams.
Maud Adams, thank you.
Yep.
Brain freeze.
Yep.
Yeah. And there does feel like there's tension, doesn't there, here? I think she's here to negotiate for the egg back, and they are not liking each other, which is slightly surprising because they are about to end up in bed together. So how does that work? I don't know.
No one can resist James Bond's charms eventually.
Wow.
Oh, bang, right to it. There we go. Oh, yeah, close her off.
No, there's no mucking about. One sip of champagne and suddenly we're in bed together. That's how that works.
Not from my experience.
Bond, if you're James Bond.
If you're James Bond, yes. Big coda there. Big asterisk on this. Yeah, big. Yeah. I love the key lighting on her, like right on her face. Like, it looks terrific. This is very high gloss filmmaking on him too. Like, you know, they're kind of surrounded in darkness, and then you've got these little pin lights on the two of them. They look great.
He is in good shape, isn't he, Roger
Moore? Yeah, he looks great. Hey, look, I think he's about, like I said, I think he's about 54, 55 at this point. I'm only a couple of years away from that. I would be thrilled if I look this good when I'm his age.
Yes, something to aspire to.
Yeah, absolutely. Now that's my little octopussy.
Yeah. Which looks like the worst temporary tattoo. It's flaking off. You know?
Yeah, terrible. It does not look like that's like sticks her tongue out on, like she's really, really into this. Like, okay.
Method acting, that is.
Yeah. Oh
my. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite James Bond? Is there one actor that you just tend to, either the actor or the actor was in a set of films that you prefer more than any of the others?
No, I come from this from a Doctor Who background, and you love all your Doctor Whos, but you said, you know, you have your Doctor Who, and they all bring something different. I don't think there's been a bad actor. Mm. I think I've come to appreciate Timothy Dalton a lot more.
Mm.
Particularly his first one, I do not think he was well served by the second movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think Pierce Brosnan feels a little bit cheesier. Again, it was that sort of moving. I think it sort of goes harder and slightly campier, doesn't it? And I think, I think Timothy Dalton was a move away from that sort of very late era Roger Moore. And he was a bit tougher and a bit harder. And Pierce Brosnan went a little bit more softer again.
Yep.
But I think they're all great. I think Daniel Craig's been terrific. I think, you know, that's a really good series of movies. I think they've all been great. But yeah, I mean, I guess like you, Roger Moore was probably the one I knew growing up. So I've sort of come to know more Sean Connery. But like I said, you know, these have been very easily accessible on the TV. You know, they used to be, it's traditional that when we have a public holiday, one of the TV channels, usually ITV, will put on a Bond movie.
As I'd read all the
books, you kind of go, oh, great, I've never seen Thunderball. Let's watch that. And it would be on. And you just kind of see, even though they'd kind of passed in the cinema, they were pretty readily accessible on TV. You know, you just wait until your next holiday and you'll get one of them. So yeah, so I, I've, I think I appreciate them all, but in different ways. There we go. That's a very diplomatic answer, isn't it? Not having a favorite.
That was it. There was a great little stunt where Magda ties her dress to the railing and then jumps off, and it spirals off of her, and then she lands and she's kind of in her, I don't know, like in a bikini, and she, you know, she's really quite beautiful. And then Kamala's right there to grab her, and then the whole gag is that she's got the egg, and that she's stolen the egg from James Bond. Now we're going to learn, obviously, Bond fooled by this, but that's the gag that we're. Yeah. They think that they've
I've heard that stunt called the longest jump in history, because it started off in Pinewood Studios and it ended up in India. She's a record holder.
That's terrific. Yeah, I didn't even think about that, but yeah, you're right. Yeah, she starts the jump in one location and lands in a second. That's great.
Now, here we've got Khan with his egg, bugged egg, though they don't know it's bugged, and this sequence, they are very deliberately not showing you Maud Adams' octopus's face. And I have no idea why they're keeping it a secret.
I mean, she's on the poster. Yeah. I mean, like, what? Yeah. What's the, I don't get the suspense here. Yeah.
You just see the back of somebody wearing a silk dressing gown with an octopus painted on it for some reason, because that's her thing. She's as good at the branding as Batman is good at branding. Yes, she is. You know?
Oh, we're going to get into the henchman uniforms.
Yeah, yeah.
We saw them briefly in a second on this boat, but we're going to get a better glimpse of the henchman uniforms, which are up there with the Batman TV show in terms of their ostentatiousness. Yeah, she's love her criminal organization here.
Yeah. Now I wonder if she wasn't available for filming. I wonder if we.
Oh, that's interesting. I wonder if it. Yeah, like well, this isn't so even her.
Back of her dressing gown and a wagging finger and putting some fish food for the. Do you think this octopus is real, or do you think that is a puppet? It's sort of throbbing and wiggling its tentacles. You know, I don't know if that's a real animal.
It's probably real.
If it's a puppet. I don't know. Okay. They're nasty things, those octopi. Do you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Those blue-ringed octopi are the most venomous creatures on the planet.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
No, oh, that is, wow. That is, okay.
That's an actual natural history fact for you, Rob.
Oh, that's great.
They're nasty.
They look pretty real. I would say that they probably didn't bother to make a puppet.
There is definitely coming up where it's like a face hugger. You know?
Oh, it's a great gag. There's a great gag coming up with the octopus. That's
yeah,
true.
Yeah.
It's so interesting that the Bond films set the template for a certain style of filmmaking, and then others went and. I mean, not outdid it, but other films took these developments and ran with them, and then the Bond film then incorporates them. You said the bit we're going to get to with the octopus, it is a facehugger scene.
Yeah,
there's no way they didn't see Alien and took it, from that.
Yeah,
so
and maybe a little bit of Indiana Jones, as we said. There's all these little nods, little
look at these. Easter look, he's Easter tossing
eggs.
The egg.
Fabergé Easter eggs. Yeah.
He's tossing the egg back and forth in his hand like it's a baseball.
Yeah. It isn't something you just paid $500,000 for.
And is made of diamonds and gold and all sorts of crystal and things and that can break off if you dropped it.
Really ought to be in a museum, you just toss it around. That's do what you want with it.
Okay. Well, there's that guy does have a great stare. The Kabir Bedi, I believe, is the actor that's playing Gobinda here. He's very intimidating. Lock clicks. Yeah, for the James, I have liked all the actors, like you said, that have played Bond. I think Dalton and Brosnan got least served by the movies. I think their movies are not great. But the performances were fine, especially I really liked Dalton. And I think I might have even said this in other contexts, but I still would love, they'll never do it, but Timothy Dalton is still so relentlessly charming that I would love it if they brought him back for like one movie as old James Bond. Like just retired Bond, they bring him back into service, and they just that like one, just a one-off. That would be so cool. To see that, but they'll never do that, obviously. No. But
As M, he would make a great M.
Oh, he's just when he was in Hot Fuzz, which of course we did a commentary for. He's just so charming. He's so funny. And
Yeah.
And he got to be all the things that I don't think they let him be in the Bond movies. He's so serious.
Yeah.
In the Bond films. Yeah. He doesn't get to show any of that twinkle that he has in his eye that Moore has and that Dalton clearly has. And so I'd love it if they would let him. That would be really cool to bring him back as M or something. Yeah. That would be really fun.
I agree.
But you know,
Crisis on Infinite Bonds.
Yeah. I mean, that's what they're doing in Flash right now, aren't they? You know, they're bringing back all the multi-versions. So, and Spider-Man, why not? Find a way to... I mean, they tried to do that with Skyfall, because the Albert Finney at the end was supposed to be Sean Connery. They went after Sean Connery for that,
really?
And Connery turned it down.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Oh, that is a shame. That is a shame.
Now, I will say
this meal, Rob, as a vegetarian,
I don't
like
this.
Feeling
at all.
Okay about this meal?
No, I actually generally don't think this is funny. I don't like gags where the gag is look at what we've done to an animal. Like, I just find it just gross. And then this thing with the eyeball is just.
Yeah. Apparently, it was marzipan.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just disgusting. It's just really gross. And. Of course, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom would do a similar gag just a year later with the monkey brains. But I'm just like, it's not. I know it's a James Bond movie. Can't take it too terribly seriously. But I just anything where there's like an ant, you know, it's not.
It's sort of gross out for the sake of gross out, isn't it? Yeah.
And I'm like, those are probably real heads. You know, to be honest with you, they probably didn't bother to build puppet heads. They probably just went to some slaughterhouse and got the heads or something, but all right.
Yeah.
Suppose he wouldn't like a nightcap. No.
The Bond's about to use his pen. Found a use for the pen.
Yeah, there we go. He's gonna melt through the eat through the bars with the pen.
Yeah. And this was, I think this was some place in India where the kind of local ruler, I don't think he was technically a Maharaja, but it's that sort of thing, was very keen to get the investment of big movies into his province. And so he was very happy for him to come and use all these great palaces and things.
Oh, sure. I mean, it's a feather in your cap. Hey, we shot a James Bond movie here, you know?
Yeah.
Aside from the pumping money into the local economy, but just the bragging rights. I'm sure that you get to say, well, I get to, can I meet? And I love in movies, women are always undressing by open windows in movies. They're always sitting within where there's, a big open space where anyone could be watching them, but it's all right.
MI6 HR is just shaking it. But in fairness, he is trying to escape. You know, he's not. True. He's not the.
That's true. He wasn't there to spy on her. He just happened to see her. That's true.
Yeah. Now. We have the floodlights coming on.
It is amazing to think, you know, we look back at. But I think part of the charm of these, too, is that. And it's not anything that they could have expected that would resonate, but all this stuff is real, you know, all this stuff is real things. They got a real helicopter they flew, you know what I mean? Like, there's no digital trickery here at all. And so it's like just the Herculean labor of all these sets are all built. Yeah. You know, these are real people running around doing all this stuff.
That stunt in the pre-title sequence, you know, that plane flying through the hangar, you know, that would never be allowed. That would be so unsafe. They would go, of course, we'll CG that, you know.
Yep.
It wasn't possible in 1982. You know, they couldn't do that. It was, you know, some guy had to fly a little plane through a hangar and out the other side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get too far afield off of this movie, but I was watching Catch 22 the other night, the Mike Nichols film, and I'm doing some research on it, and there was a bit about that there was a second assistant cameraman who had to shoot footage out of the back of a plane, and he refused to wear a safety harness because he was kind of like a macho guy, and he fell to his death.
Oh my God.
We're making the movie, you know, just like he slipped and fell and it was his own fault because he didn't wear the harness. But it's like, you know, that they just, not that that wasn't a tragedy, but back then I was like, well, all right, you know, like that would never, that's not a thing now, you know? I mean, I just don't, that's good. I mean, we don't want people to die making movies, but it's just, they just were seemingly so more cavalier about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, you just think it's like all the effort that these things all existed in real space. Either they were sets that were built or they were locations that they went to, but there's not a single thing made in a computer here. And again, I'm not trying to sound like old man yells at cloud, you know, where it's like, oh, in the old days it was better, but these films do have a tactile, you know, feeling of, you get like a reward from it. Cause you're just like, my God, they really had to do all this. They couldn't, you know, and that's not, I mean, again, it's not anything they could have expected, you know? I mean, this is 83, right? So the home video market is just coming into play. They are realizing that these movies are going to have an aftermarket life. I mean, as you said, the Bond movies ran on television and they ran here all the time. You know, they are realizing that, these things are not just going to play in a theater and then disappear forever. They're going to, you know, we're going to make money off these forever.
Yeah. Well, this was the 13th movie. By this stage, I think they knew it had legs, didn't they?
Yeah.
You know, this was a significant franchise. And as you and I have previously discussed, the second longest British film franchise.
Second only to? To what?
Carry On.
Carry On, Carry On series. Franchise.
So Orlov's, so those who are not watching along, Orlov's just shown up in his helicopter, and you know, there's a bit of exposition about the jewelry smuggling and all that kind of stuff going on, and Bond has listened in through the microphone in the egg and says that they're going to East Germany. Yeah,
Kamal just discovered it. He just knows there's a bug in it. By the way, how did they never do a Carry On James Bond parody? I mean, they couldn't do Bond, obviously, but how did they never do that?
They did.
They did. Called
Carry On Spying, which
is, of course,
so loosely James Bond, it's untrue. But if you're interested, and
I am.
After your previous Carry On experience, you could be excused for not being interested.
I'm up for it.
Carry On Spying. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Right, I gotta find that. Yeah. No. I enjoyed our trip.
I think it's the last black and white one, actually.
Oh, interesting. Oh, wow. Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I enjoyed our visit to Carry On Screaming for Film and Water. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed that quite a bit. So,
well, we said we want to do Carry On Cleo, don't we? Which is probably the biggest production value one, because they basically had the cast off sets from the Richard Burton,
Elizabeth Taylor Cleopatra movie.
So it looks great. There we go. Okay, we'll pencil that one. We have an increasing list of films we want to do, don't we, Sarah?
We'll have to
add that one to the list.
That's another thing that you can't do nowadays, which is a shame, but they would reuse sets in old movies.
Yeah.
Because why not? We built it. Why are we throwing all this stuff out? Why not make another movie with it? And, you know, back then people weren't paying attention to this stuff. Nowadays they do, and you'd have some troll on YouTube, they total fail, you know, and stuff like that. It's like, come on, you know, you're going to spend $50 million building sets. Yeah. Why not make a quickie little comedy on those same sets? Why not do it?
Yeah. The vase is a different shade of blue. You are rumbled.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Here we go. Now, I love that the gag. He's in the bag. They think he's a corpse and he made a little oof sound.
This is pretty grim here, where they take them outside. The thing is, they're going to go on a tiger shoot, and it's partly to shoot tigers and partly to shoot Bond. But they take the bodies outside from there. That rather disturbingly, they've hung the bodies in their meat store,
the meat locker
thing, yeah. And Bond's hiding out in there, and then they just throw the bodies outside. And I thought, oh, is it to tempt the tigers out for meat? But now they're just dead. They're no just bones on the ground.
Yeah, there's a bunch of rib cages there at the bottom of the ravine. So yeah, they're
Khan's. You know, the people he's bumped off, and you know, he's just had them out there, and yeah, nasty.
The sport.
And here we are in the jungle. That tarantula really did look like it got properly squished. I really hope that was a fake tarantula with goo inside it.
That's again, I feel like that had to be a slight Indiana Jones. He does look like he got squished, yeah. Doesn't he?
Yeah.
I feel like the tarantula bit had to be a little bit of a Indiana Jones because he gets.
I think that there are definite nods, aren't there? I mean, again, it's sort of in, you know, there's there's another reference coming up soon, isn't there, with the swinging on the vines? But yeah.
Oh, Lord. Now, okay. Yeah, it's we're going to get to one of the unforgivable gags in this movie. Everyone hates him as a clown at the end, which does not bother me that much. I think within context it works, but there is the gag coming here, but the Tarzan yell gag is pretty unforgivable. That is one of those, like, what were you guys thinking? Come on, what are we doing? Like, I know these are not meant to be serious, but I mean, then you know,
it's pushing it a little bit.
It's far. Not.
Did you get the gag where he tells the tiger to sit?
Sit, yeah.
Did you get that?
Yeah.
When this was around, there was a woman on the BBC called Barbara Woodhouse, and she had a series called Train Your Dog the Woodhouse Way.
Oh!
It was quite a sort of prim, school marmish kind of lady, and her thing was to tell the dogs to sit. That's the British gag.
Didn't realize that it was a reference. I thought he was just the gag was that he was talking to the tiger like it's a pet, telling it to sit.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that's okay. And that's why you can't cast an American as James Bond.
What's that about?
It's got to be a British guy. Come on, what are you doing? I feel bad for the elephants. Yeah, I feel bad for any enemy. And oh, here, yeah, the Tarzan. Yeah. Oh no, 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 no. Just guys, that's is that worse than the pigeon double take in Moonraker? Is it cheesy on that? You can burn a leech off of him. That's pretty nasty. Burning the leech off you.
Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah. Ugh. why well, can you as a doctor can you explain why does the flame burn the leech? Is it just that it causes enough pain to the leech that retracts its little fangs or whatever?
Makes it shrink from the flame, I would think, but yeah.
What can a leech do to you if you leave it on you? Like, suck your blood, right?
The thing about leeches is they pump an anticoagulant in, so it never stops, it doesn't clot, so it just keeps filling up with blood.
Oh,
so yeah. So, I mean, could a single leech drain all of your blood? I can't see that happening, but you know, it's
not good for you,
it's not great.
Okay, right, okay,
not great.
Are you with our group? No, ma'am. I'm with the economy tour. Bond is a rare breed, soon to be made extinct.
Oh, he's good with it. He's got some good one-liners, actually, hasn't he? Quite threatening kind of stuff he's got going on.
I love the drawing of the octopus. That's a pretty good drawing of the octopus. He did it with blue ink and a gold ink, and you know, like, you didn't just do a little doodle.
Just my casual note, you know.
Pretty good drawing. Jeez.
Maybe he peeled off the temporary tattoo and stuck it on the notebook.
Got one of the Cracker Jack boxes and they pulled it out.
He's getting a bit of a rub down there from VJ.
Now here we go. Another amazingly expensive fake octopus. Octopus. No, the fake crocodile is what I mean. Crocodile.
That's, it's another folk. You want a what?
It has to be a the length of a man. It has to be airtight. There has to be a sensor in it. It has to float. It has to fit. Like, what?
And welcome to the island of Thymaskira.
Well, that woman's naked there. I just never realized that. I just noticed that.
Well,
I saw her little bare butt there for a second. That's pretty rare for a James Bond movie. Okay.
I was thinking, actually, Maud Adams, had Linda Carter not been available, she would have made a great 70s Wonder Woman.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. By the way, Maud Adams, of course, was also in The Man with the Golden Gun, making her the only actress to sort of be ostensibly two Bond girls. I mean, she's not really a Bond girl here by that sort of classical definition. She's really, the villain slash, hero kind of. She's got like a Catwoman energy where it's, it's kind of a partner to Batman, but kind of not.
Yeah.
But she has a great look. She's strikingly beautiful. She would have been a terrific one. They apparently initially thought of Sybil Danning to do this, and then they went with Maude Adams. I don't think, no offense to Sybil Danning, I don't think Sybil Danning quite has the acting chops for this level. She was kind of a B-level action adventure, but she had big breasts, and it was kind of like, it was one of those kinds of things where she's always in skimpy outfits shooting guns kind of thing. And now we see her. Yeah, she's
the first time we see Octopussy.
Yep. Yeah. Startlingly beautiful. And she carries herself that you can buy that she is sort of this, the runner of this organization. She seems very smart. She's very like kind of got it all together. I like her back and forth with Bond here. Again, maybe it's because they had already previously acted together or whatever, but she's still around, Maude Adams. She hasn't been in anything in a little while. She was in Rollerball, the 70s version of Rollerball. She was in a movie called Tattoo. Apparently, according to IMDb trivia, and you can, caveat emptor on that, she is...
warning.
Yeah, warning. She has a cameo in A View to a Kill as a patron... Okay. A restaurant patron in like a group scene where apparently... Now, I've never been able to spot her. But according to, again, the trivia that I've seen, that she is in that film and some, it's just kind of a gag. So, okay, that'd be nice.
Okay.
But yeah, she's
hanging around San Francisco,
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
But yeah, she's beautiful. She's just this uniform. These uniforms, these henchwomen wear are just next level. Skin tight, Superman red. Top to bottom jumpsuits with a belt and an octopus chest emblem. I mean, these are uniforms that like the Joker on the Batman TV series would say it's too much. It's too much.
All it needs is Goon One on the back.
Yeah. Oh my God. They are just really, these are your outfits? I know that they're not trying to blend in, but they really are quite.
Yeah. Well, There is that bit at the end with the big fight at the end where they're in their cat suits and you kind of go, it's a little bit obvious. Scarlet Red is not really ninja, is it?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly. I think you would not give them a Superman red set of uniforms. But yeah, those look uncomfortable, Here we go. There's the octopus. Now, okay. We find out here that their connection is that Octopussy's father was into smuggling and he ended up running afoul of James Bond, and Bond was going to bring him in, but then allowed him to basically commit suicide as instead of bringing shame to his family or whatever. And so Octopussy is she resents Bond, but she also realizes that he did do her kind of a solid. And I think that's a fun bit. I think it would have been kind of cool if they had just tied it into one of the movies. If they had just said, my father was Blofeld. My father was Goldfinger. Just make it a more direct comparison and say, okay,
Well, the Major Dexter Smythe, who she says was the her father, that was one of the characters in the short story. So I think that's, it's an extremely tangential, you know, tiny little detail just to tie it to the Octopussy short story.
Right.
Yeah. And no matter how much you love octopi, do not give your daughter the nickname Octopussy. That is not okay. That is not good.
It is kind of amazing that, like, we just, other than the one moment where Magda says, "That's my little Octopussy," and Roger Moore does a little eye about this killer implement is amazing. But other than his little eye movement where she says that, no one reacts that.
Yeah.
Yes, I know that the word can be used in other contexts, but it just, I remember being a kid and, you know, it was like Octopussy. You kind of like just, you lowered your voice a little because it was like, okay. Call her anything else. Like, what am I calling her?
That yo-yo buzzsaw.
Oh my God.
That is nasty, isn't it?
That looks like the kind of thing that was, you're going to hurt yourself just as easily as you might hurt the person you're aiming at. It's going to fly back and hit you. You know, it's like when you're a kid and you get like nunchucks or something and you end up banging your own head open because you're an idiot. You don't know how to use them.
So what do we make of Octopussy's business empire? She takes waifs and strays off the street and puts them into her business empire, which includes hotels, shipping, carnivals, and circuses, which is, you know, a divested portfolio if ever I heard of one. You can see the guy. How do we shoehorn the circus in? How do we get the circus? Okay. She's got a property empire. Great. You can't build a business empire on circuses alone. You know, what else is she into?
not weapons, the emerging computer infrastructure. Yeah.
None of that.
Circuses, you know, those cash cows.
With a side hustle of jewelry smuggling.
this might be my prejudice showing, because I never liked the circus even as a kid. I was never interested, and I just found them to be sort of ghastly and not interesting. But by the 80s, culturally, circuses were not really a thing.
They were on their way out by the 80s.
So Bond, you know, dragging a circus into this does feel very, unfortunately, kind of old hat. You know, it does feel very like, come on, guys, catch up. You know, in 1983, young people are not looking at circuses as some sort of cultural touchstone that you can, you know. Yeah. So, I invest in circuses and carnivals. Well, you're not going to make a lot of money doing that, Octopussy. You really...
Yeah, I think stick to the shipping and the hotels. I think
real estate. I think,
just
do real estate. That's what it's the one thing they don't make more of, you know.
Let's just go back to Octopussy's commitment to the branding gig. Is she has a gilt octopus bed?
That is sweet.
Is that sexy? I don't think that's sexy. I don't think that's appealing at all.
You know, Mud Adams gets you through. You know, it doesn't matter. You're not paying attention to the bed. Who cares? Whatever. the bed can have whatever it wants on it. Mud Adams wants to get down. That's fine. That's good. It looks like the bed that Superman and Lois sleep in the Fortress of Solitude in Superman 2, with those kind of velvety sheets.
Now, here we go.
Oh, VJ.
He's going to get it.
He's going to get it.
Sorry, guys. It's pretty good how they capture him, though.
Mm-hmm.
He's distracted for a moment, and he's looking around, and then... all of a sudden, somebody leaps out of the water at him.
Yeah, there you go. Two guys. Cool. This guy does all the dirty work. He does all the...
Super scary guy. Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah, that's a good thing. It's got a... Good... Oh, here we go. Oh!
Smash cut, two birds flying away.
Cut him in half or something. Those are...
Yeah. Well, yeah, we'll come back to that because you would have thought that would be a fatal blow, wouldn't you? But
Yeah,
he
giant
claims.
metal, yeah, razor-tipped gear being thrown at your head. Yeah, you would think so.
And they hold him out, so his whole kind of front of his chest is exposed to the buzzsaw blade, which is, not good.
Beautiful location. Like these are all gorgeous. You
Yeah,
know, I love
yeah.
the
This is I'm gonna look it up. There's the I found out that the book in the DVD says where this is. It's a palace somewhere in India. Hang on, bear with
Oh,
me.
absolutely stunning. I mean, again, this is contrary to what I said earlier. I mean, this is not the kind of thing the average person can see. Again, maybe nowadays you want to go on YouTube or something, but 1983, this is pretty, most people, this is pretty exotic stuff. I didn't know anything like this. I didn't see anything like this. Why don't you come
There
back
we
to
go.
bed? Here we go.
It's
Yeah.
the Jagmandir Palace on the southern tip of Lake Picola, Picchola. And the Kamal Khan's Indian Palace is actually called the Monsoon Palace. So
Okay.
there we go.
Oh, there we go. The little drop. Oh, that. Oh, I love that when they when the blade, it somehow it seems to be automated. So when it lands, it starts,
It
it
travels under
rolls.
its
You
own
know,
power.
yeah. It doesn't just cut. It rolls like it's a wheel, and then starts just slicing through everything. There was a Marvel villain, I think the Gladiator. He wore a helmet who had those on his wrists, and he would fire them at people, and they just look really nasty. You know, like, not only would it cut you, it would kind of, grind you up a little. You know, like it would tear at your, it would tear at your innards,
It does have the slight disadvantage that you do have to be 6 feet above your victim.
at all times. Oh, here we go. The gag's coming up. Here we go, whammo into the and then the octopus is gonna grab. Oh, there he is. Oh, yep, very face huggery. He sauntered the door.
And then it sort of, there we go. It's either pumping venom into him or it's humping his face. I can't tell which, but neither
Love
is
this.
good.
I love she says. I love that octopusy when the henchwoman comes in and she says, "Give me the gun." That she so we know that Octopussy is a micromanager, like let your henchwoman fire the gun. That's why you hire these people. Why can't she fire the gun by herself? Now they think Bond is.
And it's nice that it's a dart gun. It's a tranquilizer gun. It's not a bullet, is it? So which is sort of making her less, slightly less villainous. She's prepared to shoot you, but not actually kill you, kind of.
We're going to use the crocodile again, alligator, big one. But yeah, I just thought that was funny when she comes in and she's like, "Give me the gun." Well, why, aren't I a trained assassin? Like, why can't I just do it? The time we took handing you the gun, could have done it myself.
Just say, shoot him.
I don't like the
Now,
idea
here we
that
go.
Octopussy's organization is like. Did you file those TPS reports? This is kind of tedious. Yeah, I know. I just put the wrong cover sheet. It's okay.
The admin office doesn't look anything like as beautiful. It's just a block out the back. Although there's the lovely palace, and she's got the admin
I'm gonna need you to come in on Saturday. All right, I don't want to do that.
block. Can I use the pool? No, you can't use the pool. The pool's for me. I get exclusive use of the pool.
I always thought it would have been neat to. They said we lost. The has the line about we lost 009. That we don't really ever get to see the other 00s that much. I mean, I realize that the specialness is that he's 007. He's the top dog. But I always thought it would have been fun, across 25 films they've done, to occasionally visit in with
Team
some of
them
the other
up.
00s. Yeah, that would have been.
No, we only ever really meet other double A's when they die or
Yeah, right. They
fail or
they're introduced just to get killed off, basically. think one of the other benefits to, you know, making films and getting to travel in these great locations is you get a vacation out of it, you know, as an actor, you know, you get to, you know, oh, now we're in the circus. So, yeah, well, good thing Octopussy's investing in this because look at the crowds. They're pretty big. Yeah. The money's just rolling in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Octopussy, yeah. IBM or Apple. Try that.
Yeah, around the 80s, the stock would have been very affordable.
Yeah, exactly. You could buy a lot of Apple stock for what you're for what. Take some of the Barnum and Bailey money.
Well, and the other thing is, move it over to Apple. This is clearly an international circus, right? You know, they travel across Europe. It has the name Octopussy on it. So could you not think that there's a connection between the circus and the lady you just met?
Are you going to take your kids to the Octopussy circus? Is that a thing you're going to do? Maybe, the, you know, maybe the dad wants to go, but not the like the wife and the kids.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, there was a theme, wasn't there? A bit later than this, this sort of alternative circus, the sort of slightly more risque, you know, juggling chainsaws and that kind of stuff. So maybe the Octopussy circus, you know,
is
transformed from this sort of more family-friendly fair into
something a little more
alt.
I mean, you've got these girls here in these outfits. Like, I didn't go to the circus a lot as a kid, but I don't remember this. Like, the circus didn't have girls
like
in skimpy outfits.
Girls, they?
Yeah, they look like they look like Vegas showgirls. They don't look the circus that I ever went to was they never had any. I mean, I was a kid, and if there had been a girl in a revealing outfit, I probably would not have noticed at that age, pre-puberty, but. Still, I don't remember it being, you know, this kind of Vegas sort of slight thing to it.
Yeah. The best outfit is this magician lady who's got this sort of very diamante studded magician's jacket. She's sort of like
Zatanna.
Up. Zatanna. Yeah. And then this guy who's the human cannonball in his silver.
With his wings and his goggles.
And his wings and his goggles. He's great. He doesn't have much, but he's sort of really good comic relief.
Yeah,
he's great.
He's very big. Like he's, you know, it's a me, a Mario. He's really he's really big.
He is
really big. I'm gonna fire him. Look at that. Oh, okay. That's good. All right. Exciting for the kids, sure.
It's great. Yeah, it's like I say, it's sort of family friendly kind of stuff, isn't it? Apart from throwing knives. Don't throw knives, kids.
Yes, he's a doctor, everybody. You got to listen to him. Don't throw knives.
It's a public service announcement. Do not throw really sharp knives that go in wood. Unless you're a twin. If you're twins, it's fine.
Right. Well, you got a spare. Right. Of course. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Now, none of this is, you know, this film, Octopussy, as it gets, as many things do on the internet, gets quickly derided. For the whole bit where Bond is eventually going to dress as a clown that comes later. And then none of that really bothers me that much. It's not, to me, him as a clown is much less undignified than the Tarzan yell, you know? You know, it's like, okay, it's a clown. Yeah, it's maybe a little silly. You don't want to see James Bond dressed as a clown, but he's not in it. He's undercover. He's not doing it to be funny, you know? And in fact, there's another scene that we'll get to that I think is, similar to the Tarzan yell, inexcusable and makes Bond look terrible. And I just shake my head that they included. Well, again, we'll mention it when we get to it. But him as the clown never bothered me, especially since the final scene is fairly well put together. You know, he's got to defuse the bomb and all that stuff.
I'm fine with that. I have one minor beef with it, which we'll get. Well, I'll tell you when we get there. But no, it's fine. It's all part of the thing, isn't it? He's running away. He's trying to blend in.
Yeah.
Being a clown in the circus is fine.
Yeah. You got to blend in the circus.
This is the bit where it all gets a bit complicated. And we've got Olof and we've got Khan and we've got Octopussy and who knows what's going on and who believes what and who's double crossing who and what are they doing? They're putting the jewelry in, but then they're putting the bomb in, but then they're taking the jewelry and the bomb. The jewelry's going in the back of the car, but they haven't crossed the border. And what are they? Why do they need the circus? If he's going to put it in the boot of his car, what the hell? Yeah, this is the moment where the plot just kind of goes, yeah, we're giving up. Don't worry about any more of it. It's just, it's a Bond film. Just enjoy the ride.
There's a bomb that Bond's going to have.
Trouble your pretty little head about the plot.
Right. Obviously, we've introduced a bomb. Bond will have to defuse that bomb. We know that. We know he's going to have to kill Orlov. He's probably going to have to kill Khan. He's going to kiss Octopussy again. You know, like, it's, and that's part of the, I appreciate that, again, the later films tried to upend all that. You know, they're competing in a much different cinematic marketplace. But there is something very reassuring that the film is going to deliver these beats that you know are coming. And it's all just a matter of, did they find an inventive way of doing it?
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, there's something very reassuring about, yeah, you just know he's going to, okay, he's going to do this. He's going to do this. There's going to be an end scene of gag, you know, there's going to be, you know, and that's just how it works. This is what these movies are. And you, if you want something else, there's lots of other movies for you to see. You know, if you don't want this, there's the Bourne franchise and there's the Marvel movies and there's this and that, but this.
There is a formula, and by purchasing your ticket, you are buying into the formula.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Now, I mean, of course, you know, 1983, they have much less competition for on the action scale. Again, I'm thinking Indiana Jones was definitely a marker of like, hey, you know, we can do a charming hero, action adventure hero. It's sort of funny
we did have another Bond film, didn't we, this year, which apparently that's the fact that the Connery film was due out. That's why Roger Moore finally kind of signed on the dotted line.
Exactly. But, exactly.
Yeah, what else did we have in 83? Jedi? Return of the Jedi?
Return of the Jedi came out in 83, Have you seen, I assume you've seen Never Say Never Again.
Oh, yeah.
What have you seen it in a while?
Reasonably recently, within a couple of years. The best sequence of that remains the Global Domination video game. Somebody should get on that and make that. You could make a terrific iPhone game of Global Domination, don't you think?
Play
with a friend, you know. One's playing. You could, you know, play for Japan for $20,000 or whatever it is. You know, that would be great. not necessarily with the electric shocks, but, you know.
They offered the part of Octopussy to Barbara Carrera, and she turned it down because she wanted to do Never Say Never Again, where she ended up playing Fatima Blush. Okay. But I thought that's an interesting, you know, the both Bond films were pursuing her and she chose to go with the one with Connery. I haven't seen Never Say Never Again in a while. I watched it on cable 15 years ago and I remember kind of being like, boy, this is really kind of slow moving. But, you know, again, that was a while ago. But I remembered it not being bad, and Connery, Connery looks good in it.
We have 6 months to get the anniversary commentary down.
Yeah, we got to get that done, yeah. But you know, I remember it was, and it's directed by Irving Kirshner, who did Empire Strikes Back. So I mean, you got a good solid director behind the camera.
They threw a lot of money at it, didn't they?
They threw
you know, Connery and a decent director. You know,
it's a real production. Yeah, it's a real. I mean, it's a shame that it was made, you know, sort of out of spite, both by Connery and by the Kevin McCrory, who owned the rights to the Thunderbolt. It's all so complicated. And they've managed to bring that all in house now. And so there's no longer these other set of rights out there but it was a weird thing. I'm just trying to explain to people. You know, here's the
really
other
complicated
guy.
Isn't it? That whole Thunderbolt rights thing. And I hadn't realized they'd resolved the legal issues.
But, yeah,
I
mean, they
I wonder had it been a smash success, I wonder where they would have gone with it. Because
wasn't much for them to do because they basically said you could only remake Thunderball. That's all you can do. Well, how many times can you remake Thunderball? You know, all right. 20 years apart, that's fine. But after that, like, how many times can we do this? And of course,
hit me out. Thunderball, but it's in space.
You're right. Yeah. I mean, like, how many, you know, what can you do? And Connery was getting old for the part. I mean, you know, he looks good in the movie, but he's got a toupee. I mean, he's getting older. I mean, think about this.
Yeah.
He's playing James Bond in Never Say Never Again, right? And he is only 4 years away from the Untouchables, where he is the grizzled old man. in that film. And he's terrific in that movie. But I mean, think about that, how much older he looks in just a scant 4 years later. Now, that movie made Never Seen Ever Again did pretty good business and made $55 million in America. But Octopussy did better. Octopussy did $67 million. And it went on to make almost $200 million worldwide for a $25 million budget is pretty good. So people were still, you know, like, oh, you know, okay. I'll see this other movie, but Roger Moore is James Bond. And so it ended up outdrawing Never Say Never Again by a little bit.
Now, we've had a couple of important plot points. Bond has tucked the Star of Romanov in his belt, which I have to confess, the last time I watched the film, I forgot about, because that will come back right at the end. And now we're about to get another brilliant bit of Stephen Berkoff being absolutely lunatic. So just enjoy.
He's got this wonderful menace in his line reads. You know, he just kind of, he looks like he's just furious all the time. He looked like that in Beverly Hills Cop, too. He always just had this kind of just
crazy and mad. I mean, genuinely nuts. And he's got this incredibly convoluted scheme because it's a Bond film. But he, you know that he genuinely believes this to be, you know, what he's going to do. He sells it so well.
If they had ever, I hate this kind of stuff because it's so hackneyed at this point, but if they had ever done a Superman movie of the John Byrne era of Superman, he would have been a great Luthor, the ruthless businessman Luthor.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it would have been scary.
Do you know who I thought you were going to say was Zod? Actually, he would have made a great
He would have been a great Zod.
Nothing
oh, my God.
Against Terrence Stamp.
No,
but...
no.
Now, look, I think this Bond film gets a bit edgy from here on here because a soldier comes in and Bond shoots him in the head.
Mm-hmm.
There is a visible bullet hole in the man's head. He doesn't do what a bullet would actually do to your head. But, you know, but there is... It starts getting...
It's pretty violent.
More edgy here. Yeah.
This is PG, this movie.
Yeah.
I guess they couldn't have... They can't do a James Bond movie where somebody's head explodes. No. They can't. That's just too much.
No. But...
Yeah, he's getting guys. He's tagging these guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is
train chase, don't we?
Yeah. It's a fairly... until this point, it's a fairly low body count for James Bond. Yeah, yeah. You know? Yeah. I mean, except we talk about, like, he pulls the chutes on those guys. He doesn't kill them. He just removes their dignity as they fly away.
alas, poor VJ. Buzzsword. Justice for VJ. Hashtag. Now, having said it's getting a bit more serious, I am seriously wondering whether Mercedes-Benz make their wheelbases exactly the right dimensions to go on train tracks. This is a bit of questionable.
Every car that ever needs to go on a train can do that. Every car, every movie that's ever just, car that ends up on a train track, they can always just ride the rails exactly right.
Yeah.
Two random passerbys as he strides by.
Well, and the guy in the signal box that changes the points is a bit perplexed as well, isn't he?
I'm just going to drive the car with his umbrella. Okay, sure. Yeah, I am doubting the physics of this. I am really doubting the physics of this. The car goes flying. That's a good stunt. Air is going to land. But look at that. I mean, again, they had to do that for real. They had to take a car and put it on a thing and throw it into that river. By the way, I don't know the rules of this. Do they have to fish that out of the river? I hope so, right? They can't just...
I would imagine.
Leave it there. It's not good for the environment. This is dump.
It's not good for anybody.
No, it's not the fish, anybody. Yeah, exactly. It's a hole. I'm kind of practicing with the knives here. Yeah, Berkoff would have been a great Zod. Now that you say it, he would have been Yeah. No, yeah. No knock on Terrence Stamp, but oh my, he would have been terrifying.
No.
As
there are certain roles where you just need people who are going to chew the scenery, don't you? Yep. And I think Terrence Stamp does it. And I think Stephen Berkoff would have been amazing at it. Yeah.
Oh yeah, they're there. They've already fished the car out of the. They're showing you right there. They're fishing the car out of the. Yeah. Oh, this guy, the guy, the all the jewels are where General Orlov now. He was in the previous. He was in For Your Eyes Only, playing the same role. This sort of
He was vaguely kind of a Russian, wasn't he? Yeah.
He's not the premier. He's kind of like a second tier guy. So there's some continuity there. Yeah, she's got her paperwork. She's investing in more carnivals. Close the deal. Close the deal on another purchase of another carnival.
Sell ladies,
we are on Easy Street. We are going to be on Easy Street. Trust me.
And the customs guys are going over everything.
Down here now. Bond in a gorilla suit.
Counters, because. Yeah, the shonkiest looking gorilla scene in the history of cinema.
And it's pretty bad. That's the same gorilla suit in the end of Trading Places, I think. It just looks pretty silly.
He's not very good at standing still, is he? He's
sort of no.
Like around.
You clearly can see Caucasian flesh under the eye holes of the gorilla suit. It doesn't...
And here we go. We're crossing the border.
Oh,
there was a lot of helicopters in this, wasn't there?
Yep.
Helicopter budget must have been enormous.
Orlov gets it.
Oh, there we go.
Common thief, a disgrace to the uniform. Tomorrow I shall be a hero of the Soviet Union. Now, I mean, again, that's a good turn. You expect Bond to kill this guy. You know? You expect, I mean, again, we've got multiple villains here, but you expect him to die at Bond's hands, but he doesn't.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. He's going against the Russian, you know, orthodoxy, isn't he? He's going against that. He's also, perhaps it is for them to deal with one of their own. But like I say, there's just a few too many villains. Who is the real baddie of this piece? Well, actually, I think the person that's behind it all is Orlov.
Right.
And everybody else is kind of, you know, he's playing Khan. Khan's playing Octopussy. So and then we've got all these multitudinous hench people of various descriptions. So it's just a little bit too complex. It's a bit like Russian nesting dolls, I guess, in terms of villains, isn't it? You know, they're. But yeah, there's. I would have liked to see Orlov as the big bad, but. Hey, we can't have everything. And Louis Jardin is great. So
yeah, I'm very happy. He's your name villain. He's your name actor here. So
yeah.
Oh, the gorilla feet with his shoes.
with his brogues underneath them. Incredibly well-dressed gorilla.
Every time I see somebody... Oh, there we go. Yeah, that's a good gag.
How did he get out of that suit?
That's great. Great gag. Great gag.
Yeah.
Nope. Jump over the thing.
This is great. There's some real, you know, again, proper stunts, aren't there, here?
Yeah. Another Magna there. Oh, the stunt at the end, which we'll get to, the plane bit is fantastic.
Amazing, yeah.
Absolutely amazing. I mean, it's never Roger Moore at any point, but it doesn't matter. It's still, you know, again, that's the thing. It's like they physically had to do it. You know, they had to do this. But yeah, all this air Bond. Oh, slip. Like, he's just like, he's holding on just by that, the lip of the window. Like, again, we know James was not going to fall to his death, but he's not, it's not like he has a great grip. You know, like there's some sort of bar or something he can really get a handle on. Like, his fingertips are just hanging on the ledge there, and his feet are dangling. Look at that. Again, this, like, does this match, you know, what they did in Raiders, where Indy is, you know, hanging under the Nazi truck with his whip? No, it's this can't compete to that level. But, and of course, Octopussy's getting a back massage from a woman, a little titillating there,
because that's what happens on all trains, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Traveling master, always just a little, you know, just, if you're feeling a bit stressed,
you just look in a window and there's one woman rubbing another woman. That's just the way these things work in this fantasy world of James Bond.
See, Amtrak are missing a trick.
That's why we need more train infrastructure here in America. You guys have it over there, but over here we don't have anything. This sword. This is great.
I'm saying, if passenger numbers are down, you just need to throw on a bit of this kind of, you know,
Maud Adams,
high stakes
for,
kind of stuff.
For high speed rail. Go Binda here has got this amazing sword that he's attacking Bond with. Many years ago, I saw a video of a guy at like some sort of demonstration of sword play or something, and he, I guess, was new, and he shoved the sword into his scabbard, and then you just see his thumb just fall off, and it scared me. It shook me to this day. I still remember it. So anytime I ever see something with a long sword, I always go like, just, it's like, don't screw with those things. They're very sharp. Make me so nervous. Now Bond's going to fight two guys on top of this train.
Twin One comes up and goes, Misha, thinking that Bond in his leather waistcoat and red silk blouson is his brother, and he turns around and he just get a moment of, oh, that's not my brother, that must mean my brother is dead. And it's a microsecond of a moment, but it's a terrific reaction shot, really sells it.
And he's throwing the knives at the door. This is for my brother. And then gets it. That's for 009. I dig that. Good.
Now, you know how we said, is it realistic to have polo fields next to air bases in Cuba? Is it realistic to think that traveling circuses just parade through American air bases with all their showgirls?
Elephants and the girls, and there's a guy in a bear costume, and there's the flying guy. Yeah,
is
these
that
girls
an
are
okay
in
thing?
Yeah, no, this
Do they
is
not
a thing.
Consider that to be a security risk.
Yeah, this is very dubious. Well, we'll get to it in a second. We're going to meet. Okay, this scene is, I think, is this the scene I'm thinking of? Where Bond's got a, he's got 2 minutes, and he's got to get, he's trying to bum a ride here, and these people are blown by him. And
I quite like that we are used to Bond having all the backup, all the gadgets, all the everything. And here he is, he's out in the woods in a foreign country with no backup at all. And I quite like sort of Bond alone having to thumb a lift and, you know, literally thumb a lift to get to where he needs to go. And there's an hour left. I like that.
I mean, like the idea. This is the part I don't like. This scene with the kids and the and then they yell and then they laugh at him and drive away.
Yeah.
And this that should never be in a James Bond movie. That's look at the kids laughing at the sad old man. That should never be in a James Bond movie. Never. He should never be the guy. I don't know why they put that in the movie. I agree with you. I like the idea that he's got to hitch a ride.
Wish for.
Yeah.
Because who does pick him up?
Right. Yeah. I just, it's like, I, Sausage every time I
picks
see,
him up.
Yeah. Every time I see that scene, I'm just like, why did they do that? Why did they make him? They're, you know, they're trying to make sure that he's, you know, this character is still relevant and interesting to younger audiences. And then you put a gag in there that is like, ah, look at the kids laughing at the old man. Like, why would you do that? That's just, that gag is baffling to me that they would bother to shoot that. I do like the gag that the couple picks him up and they're handing him sausage. Like, he just gets picked up.
They're trying to be so kind.
Yeah. At least he's got a big picnic basket with
him. Extraordinary man who does extraordinary things. And he's just frustrated by normality.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Right. That's phone good. Call, you this know. Too. Yeah, this bit with the phone call. And this woman.
I like that.
Now, see, now,
and it does feel like the tension is ramping up. They're continually checking back to the clock on the bomb and his Seiko watch. Nice product placement. You know, it really feels like he's running out of time. He's running out of time. They're really ramping that up nicely.
See, now, okay, now this gag though is similar where the woman, you know, jumps into the phone booth ahead of him, but he gets the one up on her by stealing her car, which is to me, that's what's missing from the scene with the kids. Like he shouldn't just be outflanked by the kids. I like that. Yeah. That woman disrespects him by blowing him off and she's yammering on the phone when the whole world is at stake, but then he gets around to by stealing her car. I'm like, okay, that's James Bond. Like, okay.
You're advocating for car theft. Okay. That's
I
fine.
Am.
You do that.
I am. In this emergency. Yes. Yes. I am. Okay. So the actor I wanted to mention here, the general who is sitting between Khan and Octopussy,
the American general,
okay. The American general. This is an actor named Bruce Boa. He had a pretty amazing career. Now, have you seen Full Metal Jacket, Stanley Kubrick's movie?
Oh, a long time ago.
Okay. Well, he's in that movie.
Yeah.
The general that is yelling at Matthew Modine where he says, you've got a peace symbol on your vest. And he says, born to kill on your helmet. Is that some kind of sick joke? That's the general. Okay. He's that guy. And he's, you know, he says, I don't expect anything of my men except to follow my word. Like it's the word of God. That's Bruce Boa. He is also, again, he plays a general in Full Metal Jacket. He plays a general here. And he's the general in Empire Strikes Back that talks to Han Solo where he says, you're a good fighter, Solo. I hate to lose you.
Oh, yes.
In the opening scene in Hoth. Now, knowing what we know about how he sounds in Full Metal Jacket and how he sounds here, it's obvious that he is dubbed in Empire Strikes Back. Because he sounds American, and not that he does it here, but he has a very thick accent in this film and in Full Metal Jacket, and he doesn't have it in Empire Strikes Back, so he's clearly dubbed there. But that's the same actor, Bruce Boa. Okay, so, yep,
he's the most cheerful and avuncular.
He is. He loves the circus
in this film. He's loving it. He's having a ball.
He's just clapping like he's a big kid. He's like, yay, elephants. Yay. I mean, this guy's a general. I imagine he's seen some things.
This is what being a three-star general does for you. You know? It's just life's just a ball. It's all circuses and elephants and having your pocket picked.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he doesn't even notice lady, this girl.
Zatanna standing.
Yeah, yep, yep. I love that he thinks it's funny about 2 years.
Yeah. Yes. And here's your wallet back, except all your security passes, which I've just lifted.
Wow. That general has a bunch of boxes of documents in his bathroom, probably.
Oh, topical reference. Okay.
A little bit of political humor here for the Octopus commentary. I don't care whose toes I step on. So, Bond has gotten on the base, the car. I love this. He's driving really fast. It's terrific. A little bit of car chase. Yeah, we haven't had a lot of car chases.
Having the worst day in the life. Yeah.
How could they possibly, you know, inspect all the circus stuff that's on the base to make sure it's clear of any security issues? I mean, you've got chimpanzees here and elephants and all sorts of things. You know, you've got the...
Yeah.
We're counting down 3 minutes.
You know what?
Or 5 minutes.
You asked me about how much do I have a problem with a clown Not at all, except for he's got very little time to put on his very fancy and extensive looking clown makeup. I think that's taking more than 4 minutes to put on.
I didn't think about that. But yeah, he is eating up a lot of valuable time.
Yeah. Look at that. That costume change takes more than 4 minutes for those big old shoes.
He's got to get it right.
Very, very fancy clown makeup. Yeah. But we have to have the 009 callback, don't we?
Yep. Francisco the Fearless. Yeah, he really did. He really did go all out with that outfit.
And they're loving it because he looks exactly the same as the other clown.
There you go. Okay. Oh, they then now they grab the generals is laughing. Oh, this is funny.
Yeah,
these look at the outfits these women are wearing are very skimpy. This is not any circus I've ever have this much female skin on display. Oh, here we go. There's a bomb in the cannon. Where else would a bomb be?
But I'm
you're not taking this seriously at all. For God's sakes, tell them who I am. There we go. seconds from now. Holy shit, 90 seconds.
No pressure. No pressure, General. Make your decision now.
I love it. He's just throwing guy, kicking people. Oh, I kicked that guy in the jewels with us. Look at that. This
big old clown feet.
Yeah. Look at this. Mayhem at the circus.
It is mayhem. It is mayhem. And Octopussy now has to pick a side now, doesn't she?
It's just random. Everybody's just fighting now. it just becomes a total Donnybrook.
Again, it's Benny Hill. It's Benny Hill. Oh, and now the crowd have picked up that there's a bomb. Great.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So now I like Octopussy grabs 40. The gun. That's good.
Fortunately, they didn't install bulletproof locks, padlocks.
Yeah, you can just shoot it.
And this is great. This is great.
Quiet, everyone!
Do anything hokey like pause on 007.
He gets it at exactly zero. Wouldn't it explode at that point? I mean, like, I guess it was right. He just got it out. And now, here now. I think the crowd just like, okay, well, we almost got blown up by a bomb, but it's all right.
You we weren't at ground zero. That constitutes a good day at the circus.
Folks, we've had an emergency, but everything is all right now. You and your families are safe.
Try not to go too close to the atomic bomb if you can possibly help it.
Please, everyone, because you were almost blown up, you're all treated to a free funnel cake.
Yeah, yes. Candy floss for everyone. And now we've cut back instantaneously to India.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're back in the Monsoon Palace. So this must be, there's nothing that says 3 weeks later, but it must be, mustn't it? Because they've made their way back to India. And we've brought the entire circus from East Germany to India.
How long does it take to get elephants all the way over there?
Wow. I mean, well, you saw the paperwork crossing the border, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I love that Octopussy fells that one guy with the bolo.
And it's gone into overdrive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The bolo is a great weapon. I think that's it looks like it hurts. And it wraps around your head and then the clock, clock, it hits you with the ends. Like, yeah, these girls take forever to do this whole pyramid, human pyramid thing. But again, this is every
bright red scarlet cat suits, which are not in any way stealthy.
Every guy, every guard, every sentry is hetero because he can be distracted by a woman, and he goes like, "Ooga, Chuck Jones, I shoot now." There's not a one of them is like, whatever, you know, I'm just going to do my job. I'm here to, you know, no. Now, I love how these girls look in with the capes when they're floating. Like, that looks good. They look good. Yeah. Looks kind of Batman-ish, you know?
Yeah, it's a good visual. The whole thing is a good visual, isn't it? I mean, it's not realistic in any way, but it looks great on film. They've got all sorts. They've got big, long poles. They've got a big net.
Mm-hmm. I know that later on when they introduced Halle Berry as Jinx in one of the I think it's Die Another Day. I think that's the one that she's in.
They
were hoping for a spinoff, and it didn't go anywhere. Okay. And then, you know, I know that Maude Adams was probably not enough of a star that was something they were really going to do. But I mean, could they have done, you know, one or two like B-level pictures of Octopussy and her gang of spies? Yeah, I think so. I think there's maybe enough here that you could have done something with this. Obviously, that this is a different era, but if this was done nowadays, you could totally see an Octopussy spinoff show, you know, like on some streaming channel. Because I feel like they've done enough
traveling the world with her circus. Wow.
Yeah.
Entourage of female agents.
Yeah, I think this film lays enough track for Octopussy that they could have done something, you know, in another world. They could have, you know, been like, okay, she runs this thing and she's got her agents and all the, you know, whatever stuff she's got to do. But
yeah, she treads that line between, like you say, it's a Catwoman thing, isn't it?
You know,
she's heroine, but she's also jewel thief, you know, which is an interesting. Yeah, no, I'd buy it. I think they'd have to cough up the money for some pretty fantastic location work. But
they do. They give her more. We get more into her whole thing than they would have had to have. You know, I mean, this is a 2-hour movie. I mean, I love they're all doing the somersaults and they're jumping around. Yeah. Well, that one girl knows how to throw a punch at least. The one girl really looks like she's really punched that guy.
There's flashbangs. There's also.
Oh, now we're in the balloon.
Do you remember how we said that the red catsuits were a little ostentatious and not exactly stealthy? Can we now talk about the Union Jack hot air balloon, which is lit up in the night sky? Oh, my God. This is the bit I just kind of go, no, you jumped the shark with your really, really obvious hot air balloon. No.
Q, I see here on the requisition sheet there is expenditure for one Union Jack hot air balloon. Does it have to have the Union Jack on it? Yes, it does. Okay, all right. Yes. All right. I assume we know what you're doing.
The world's first CCTV setup.
Oh, yeah, we saw the big Sony logo there. So, yeah, another little product placement.
Well, I think that's the callback to the inappropriate video watch earlier, isn't it?
I guess it would be.
That's it. That's the camera feed for his. So Bond has changed his Seiko tracker watch for his Seiko TV watch now. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. We have to shoot the thing off the banister as well so we don't get a permanent urological injury.
It still probably would hurt, though, to scrape your nether region over that thing.
I think there's quite a lot of stunts in Bond that we could just say, don't try it at home, isn't there?
It's funny to think that this, you know, like the circus thing is such a big set piece. It feels like the end of the movie. And then you realize, no, there's a whole other.
There's actually two more set pieces coming.
Yeah, there's all this. And then there's the plane after this. Like, wow. Yeah. Like, they really crammed a lot into this. I might argue that it could be that Octopussy is a touch too long. Like it's a hair over 2 hours. And as you say, it gets convoluted and they might need to just, you know, like, all right.
Yeah.
Oh, here we go. Now Q saves a bunch of the girls. Cut to.
It is always great to see Q in the field, isn't it? I think, I mean, maybe not entering in a hot air balloon, but it's always good to see Desmond Llewellyn, you know, doing useful stuff.
All the girls
and not just having the classic huh, Bond, well, make sure you bring your watch back in one piece bit.
Yeah. You know, what did you do this time, 007? Yeah.
That's obligatory, but actually being out in the field and doing useful things is quite good.
All right. Now we've kidnapped Octopussy, got her on the plane.
Can a horse catch up to a taking off plane? I'm no veterinarian, but I'm going to say probably not.
Yeah, that is. Yeah, that is a
field. It is by definition one horsepower. So, you know,
I never thought of it that way. But yeah, I guess so.
I'm going to say a plane with two propeller engines is probably a bit faster.
All right. Now, so this scene gives me the heebie jeebies. This whole I did there. That guy is about 10 years younger than Roger Moore on the plane there.
And he's strapped in.
but you know what? Yes, yeah. Of course. But they still,
I think they sell it. Yeah.
It is still a guy on a plane. I mean, yeah, I mean, the shots there of Roger Moore is obviously that's a rear projection or whatever. You know, he's on a set there. But the you know, the other stuff where it's the stuntman. That's a real guy really doing that. And yes, I'm sure he is strapped in a million different ways. There's no, but it is still a guy straddling a plane that is flying in the air. And that, you know, that is that I watch it and I go, you know, it just makes me nervous. You know, you're just like, oh, I know like Tom Cruise is the only guy that is still doing that kind of stuff.
Oh boy.
But, it just, I just
you
find
have,
that.
Do you
be...
have falling dreams? Is this one of your things? Falling
no, no. Heights? I don't really suffer. Which one? What is that? Which is that one? The fear of heights? Is that agoraphobia, acrophobia, whichever one that is? No, whatever the one is, that's the fear of heights. I don't have that in particular. I'm fine at high buildings or, you know, rooftops or whatever. Yeah. I don't get upset, but there's just something about being on a plane. On a plane, literally on a plane,
stood on the outside of a plane.
Yeah, it is just. Ooh, and then Gobinda really backhands Octopussy there.
Well, I love it. Khan goes, get out there and do him in.
Yeah,
and he goes,
out there,
get out there.
Yeah.
Goes, yeah, out there. And he goes, yeah, okay then. Sure, I'll just step outside.
Being a henchman is not now. We got two guys doing this, and again, like I said, this is. These are really guys doing this, you know, like just it makes me and oh, he hits him with the antenna. There he goes.
Yeah,
that's it. That's a show wrap for Gobinda there. OK, that's just yeah, I just think this is a great, fun set piece. You know, it really is.
Yeah, it's like I say, I mean, you know that there are stunt doubles up doing the really dangerous stuff, but I think they really, you know, they cut it, they edit it together in a way that you absolutely buy it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not, I fly okay, but I do not during the takeoff, I get a little weirded out. It feels very unnatural to go up. You're on the ground and then you're not. That part is always gives me a little like, so
yeah.
Oh, there he is, going to jump
I've
off.
I've never traveled in this small of a plane.
No, I would never fly. No, I've never done one of these little puddle jumper things.
No, if the biggest dilemma you have is chicken or beef, you know. You're
and then, yep, that's boom. That's it for Louis Jordan. So he's done. He's going to rescue. Yeah. I Maude Adams in her blue sort of chiffon.
Yeah.
It's great. This looks marvelous. This incident never occurred. There's all this covering up of stuff. There's no media covering any of these things.
Yeah.
And then we get
social media. That would be all over social media.
Yeah,
you're
exactly.
Out in the middle of the Kashmiri desert.
Yeah.
And somebody's got it on flipping Instagram.
Yeah. Yep. And now here it says our standard end where Bond is now Bond's leg is going way up in the air. I think I get it. I think I get the subtext of this. now he's about to throw all this stuff off. Is he faking?
It's north by northwest. The train going.
Yeah,
it's
the train at the end. But it, like, is he faking this? Like he drove late. All of a sudden he pulls it. He's just faking it, I guess. Right. Cause he's fine. He's not, his leg isn't broken. Yeah. So why was he doing all that in the first place?
He's just
and there we go.
Playing her along.
It's Octopussy, everybody.
There we go. We sail off into the sunset.
So the
star of Romanov, the Romanov star, they ask specifically, and I hadn't noticed that he tucks it into his belt, and then he proves that his story to Octopussy by pulling it out, doesn't he?
I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah.
So here we go. Like you said, we have a reprise from our song, All Time High. And this was Roger Moore's sixth Bond film. And of course, he would do one more. And if you count Never Say Never Again, it all depends whether you do, that means that Connery did seven Bonds, which means they are tied for the number of times they played James Bond. Daniel Craig holds the record for the most years as a James Bond. But if you want to count the official films, Moore has the record because he played the role seven times. And of course, we know that, you know, he went to do From a View to a Kill. I keep calling it From a View to a Kill because at the end of these credits, it will say James Bond will return in From a View to a Kill. Obviously, they realized that we don't need the from on there. But, you know, this was his next to last film, and he realized in View to a Kill, I'm way too old for this. So he backed it in at that point. But, you know,
made him one last good offer, didn't they?
Yep. Yeah. I mean, look, this film is flawed. I think it's, as you said, Chris, it's convoluted, maybe one too many villains. It's probably maybe 10 minutes a little too long. The Tarzan joke is completely unacceptable. There's a lot of good stuff here too, though. You know what I mean? Like the Octopussy's terrific, and you say Stephen Orloff, Stephen Berkoff as Orloff is terrific. It's a solid adventure. I had a great time with it. It was fun revisiting it again, and you know, happy anniversary to Octopussy.
Yeah, it's a really typical example of where Bond was at this kind of point, wasn't it? You know, it's got, you know, Roger Moore's so comfortable in this role, you know, to the point of not wanting to do it anymore. you know, but it's, you know, it's definitely where the franchise was. It's got all the kind of slightly silly gadgets. It's got a little bit of the campy humor, but it's a rollicking good time. Like I say, you know, you can disengage brain, stick this on, just have a jolly good time. And it's great.
Absolutely. Well, like I said, like the theme song says, we hope that we distracted you for an hour or two. Thank you for joining us, listening to Octopussy. Chris, you know, I always enjoy doing these commentaries with you. No matter what we're talking about, it is always a blast. So thank you once again for joining me here on the show.
Thank you, Rob. It's always a joy. Always a joy. We should do more Bond movies.
Absolutely. Well, we got a lot of anniversaries rolling out, you know, I mean, as the movies come out, there's always some, you know, there's always some Bond anniversary coming up. There must be what came out in 64, 74, 84. There's no 84 Bond movie. There's got to be a 64 or 74, maybe. We'll look it up. So thanks, everybody, for listening. You can find all the back episodes of the show on the website, brianwaterpodcast.com. You can subscribe to the show on any podcatcher of your choice. You can follow the show on Twitter at Film and Water Pod. If you like this show and you want to hear me talk about movies in another context, go check out my other show, Fade Out, which I am very proud of. And then finally, if you want to support the Fire and Water Podcast Network, just go to patreon.com/FW Podcast. And there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on the show of your choice. So big thanks to Corey Musa and Matt Sarice for their support of Film and Water. I really appreciate it. So that is going to do it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I don't exactly know when we're going to be back for another episode with another commentary, but I think it won't be too long. I have some other things kind of in the hopper. So just keep checking the feed, and eventually we'll find another one of these to do. It's always fun doing these commentaries. So thanks, everybody, for listening, and we will see you later. But until then, that's a wrap.
From Seiko comes the world's first ever TV watch. And in the movie Octopussy, James Bond is never without it. A technological breakthrough in the classic 007 tradition. With a clear liquid crystal display screen. For the man who does everything with style. Seiko Quartz, the future never looked so good.